A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus passed through towns and villages, teaching as he went and making his way to Jerusalem. Someone asked him, "Lord, will only a few people be saved?" He answered them, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate, for many, I tell you, will attempt to enter, but will not be strong enough. After the master of the house has arisen and locked the door, then you will stand outside knocking and saying, 'Lord, open the door for us.' He will say to you in reply, 'I do not know where you are from.' And you will say, 'We ate and drank in your company, and you taught in our streets.' Then he will say to you, 'I do not know where you are from. Depart from me, all you evildoers.' There we railing and grinding of teeth when you see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all the prophets in the kingdom of God, and you yourselves cast out. And people will come from the east and the west, and from the north and the south, and will recline at table in the kingdom of God. But behold, some are last who will be first, and some are first who will be last." The Gospel of the Lord. It is said that familiarity breeds contempt, but in religion it might better be said that it breeds presumption. Although rarely stated, it is easy to believe that knowing about God is the same as really knowing Him. The prophets, without exception, tell us that having a mastery of laws and customs, and even being involved in liturgical practices, can make one look religious, but does not automatically connect one to God. Today, Luke shows us what this really means. First, it is necessary to remember that Jesus is a Jew talking to other Jews. The Jews are a chosen people because they were ordained to bring the presence of the Lord of history to the entire world. This may be found throughout Jewish history, as we have seen in our examinations of the first readings, but has become crystal clear after the return to the exile of the exiles to Jerusalem after 430 BC. To take only one example, Isaiah writes, "It is too little, he says, for you to be my servant, to raise up the tribes of Jacob and restore the survivors of Israel. I will make you a light to the nations, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth." Although this was part of the prophetic tradition, it was not necessarily part of people's daily consciousness. It is not an accident that Jesus brings this out at the start of his ministry. Jesus told the people of Nazareth that he had come to bring glad tidings to the poor and proclaim liberty to captives. His listeners are very pleased until he adds that this is not only for them, but for non-Jews as well. When the people in the synagogue heard this, they were filled with fury. They rose up, drove him out of the town, and led him to the brow of the hill on which their town had been built, to hurl him down headlong. When Jesus is asked today, "Lord, will only few be saved?" he is being questioned, at very least, if non-Jews, Gentiles, most of us, will be saved. We already know his answer from Nazareth. But he refuses to be distracted from his message that everyone needs to have a change of heart. Simple membership in a group is a very wide gate. It does not require an upturning of mind and heart. He will only tell them that they must enter by the narrow gate. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. Since he told the disciples that he was the Messiah who would need to suffer and die, going to Jerusalem meant that he was consciously going forth to be sacrificed. That is the narrow gate. It is difficult to find and hard to accept, but it is sure. It requires making a decision, just not going along with the crowd. It is no wonder that Jesus demands strength and warns of timing. He also knows the greatest temptation. We ate and drank in your company, and you taught in our streets. This was first addressed to the Jews who experienced the ministry of Jesus face to face. We might think of this as an unbelievable opportunity, but remember the experience of Nazareth. There are no exceptions to having to choose for or against Jesus. Even Mary, his mother, needed to be tested. The sword would pierce her heart as well. This is even more pertinent for the first Christians and indeed for us. We eat and drink in Jesus' company, and in the Eucharist, we actually eat and drink on Jesus. Yet what does this mean to us? Do we experience it as a sharing in God's life and a commitment to Jesus' mission, or it's simply a ritual, perhaps even just a habit that we do on Sundays? Most eloquent statements for the need for liturgy to be connected to conversion, essentially a broken heart, for there to be true worship, are found in the Old Testament and still speak powerfully to us. The first reading today from Isaiah 66 is a good example, but my favorite is from Psalm 51. Speaking to the Lord, the psalmist says, "Well, you do not desire sacrifice, a burnt offering you would not accept. My sacrifice, God, is a broken spirit. God, do not spurn a broken, humble heart." The penalties for failure are dire and expressed today in very Jewish terms. After being cast out of Jesus' presence, they are told that there will be a great banquet with Abraham and the patriarchs and prophets. This is the messianic banquet. For this all Jews lived, and they were to be excluded. People will come from the east and the west, and from the north and the south, and will recline at table in the kingdom of God. It is not only that they will be denied a place, but that others who they deemed unworthy have followed Jesus on the cross, taken the narrow way, and were feasting instead of them. This is also a message for Christians. The story of the rich man and Lazarus is unique to St. Luke and ends with, "Neither will they be persecuted or persuaded if someone should rise from the dead." This is not about the clarity of testimony, but the firmness of response. How do we know if we have opened the narrow gate? As is always the case with St. Luke, look at our Blessed Lady. In the Magnificat, at the very beginning of the Gospel, she sings, "He has thrown down rulers from their thrones, but lifted up the lowly. The hungry he has filled with good things. The rich he has sent empty away. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last." As we know, the entire song is like this, and it is put at the beginning of the Gospel to tell us how to experience the journey that the good news will require of us. If life looks better or feels better the way everyone tells you it should, you have not opened the narrow gate. Let me suggest a simple test with a follow-up exercise. There are rare times in our lives when we express our deepest thoughts and feelings to other people. If you get a nod of agreement from most people, Is Jesus a major presence on your life's journey? After all, how many people really believe, much less act on the knowledge, that the lowly will be lifted up? But stick close to those whose eyes show understanding. For although the gate is narrow, you cannot open it alone.